Welcome to season 3 of Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Tawny. We're so excited to be back. And we are also excited to be sponsored by Tempest for this season. Tempest is a program that helps you stop drinking and start feeling better. As of this spring, they have a brand new membership program that offers monthly content, community, and expert guidance. You can learn more about all of their different membership options right now by heading to jointempest.com.
We are huge fans of Tempest. We know what fantastic work they're doing to help people stop drinking.
Absolutely. And what we love about them is that they're also super inclusive of all communities.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa.
And I am Tawny.
Today's subject is a heavy one, but I think a really important one for all of us, which is sort of a combination of we initially thought about it as when the shit hits the fan. And also talking about grief. So kind of how we deal with what inevitably happens when things, you know, deeply sad things happen in our lives. And I guess I'm start off by saying, you know, one of the things that happened, I was fortunate in the first couple years of my recovery that I didn't have any major hiccups or major, you know, run-ins with really dark, you know, sad stuff. But I did have a very close friend of mine when I was about 2 years and 3 months sober, died suddenly. And he was very, very close friend, and it was a shocking thing. And it totally... You go into kind of a shock mode when that happens. But one of the things that I found that I thought was really surprising to me was that the first thing that occurred to me when I got that news was, where do I go? Who do I help? That was like what came into my mind. Like, I would have expected, and certainly in the past, it would have been, I need a drink, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And
that's how you coped, by not coping.
Right. And I think that a lot of why my reaction was that way was because I had, you know, I had a couple years down of recovery. So I was in a pretty stable place. But I do often think about how, you know, it's a struggle for people in very early recovery, too, who are, you know, working hard to stop drinking, to stop, you know, I used alcohol to self-medicate my underlying depression, I now know, and I learned in the detox, and I used it to, you know, numb out. Sad stuff happened, I drank. And I think if you are at a point in early recovery, I think that can be really challenging and really scary. I mean, it is, it certainly wasn't the natural go-to for me for a long time to say, you know, let me go see what I can do to help his family and to help, you know, be around there. So, I mean, Tawny, have you had sort of those moments where something has taken you by surprise? And
yeah, of course. I mean, it's interesting what you're saying about you had that switch of how to, I want to say productive, but not productive, like,
Well, it wasn't about me. Like,
yeah.
When that moment happened, I didn't make it like, oh, poor me, I need a drink.
Yeah, you were wanting to be of service.
Right.
You know, you lost someone
which surprised
close
me.
To you.
Which surprised me.
And, you know, and that's a great way to go about it. And it's also okay to acknowledge and reflect, holy shit, I just lost someone that I care about.
Right.
And that's definitely the route that I took with, I lost both of my grandmothers within a 6-month time period. Mm-hmm. In the first year of my recovery.
Yeah, that's a big
so
deal.
That was very challenging. I was new to New York. I was new to sobriety. And I was, you know, my grandmothers were very close to me. I have a very small family. So, you know, when someone dies, it's like,
yeah,
then our family becomes even smaller. So it was a huge deal in our family, losing them. And, you know, my Nana passed away on September 11th of 16. And so it was, you know, the energy in the city on September 11th is already just
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah.
It's a tough day.
It's a strange day.
Even if everything goes right, it's a tough day in New York. So I got I knew she was very sick and her days were numbered. So it was not a shock, but it was still, I think what shocked me the most was not being able to be there. I was in New York City and my family is grieving in Texas.
Right.
And I started to feel very lonely. Of course, I had friends, but they were friends that I'd only known for less than a year.
Right. And they didn't know your Nana or your relationship with her.
Exactly. These were new friends and they helped me get through this. But it was challenging because I was essentially alone and my family was a 4-hour flight away.
Right.
So I felt this guilt of like, you know, when I want to go home, I want to be with my family, but what can I really do? Mm-hmm. What good is it going to be of me to, you know, not work and not be in New York? What good would it be for me to be with my family right now? Or should I wait until the funeral?
Right.
So that was something that I struggled with. And I wanted to drink.
You did. You felt it. Like, I would love a drink right now.
Yeah, and that was honestly the first time in my sobriety that I just, like, I sat back and I was like, ugh, like, I just wanted a beer. I didn't want to get wasted.
Yeah.
I wanted to just have a beer and just, like, check out for a second. And, you
just
know?
Just, like, have that tension break.
Yeah,
melt.
Exactly.
Like, melt the tension quickly.
I just wanted that. Right. I wanted a beer. And, you know, and instead of having a beer, this was, you know, we've spoken sometimes about, you know, my issues with sex and love addiction as well. So instead, I called someone that I was hooking up with and he came over and we talked and I cried and, you know, he was there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had sex.
Right.
And that helped me feel better.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's we talk about
that was a way to find some relief.
I found
without picking up a drink.
Exactly. I found some relief. And, you know, sex addicts might say that that was a relapse, but I say that that was just a different way that I coped with it. And recovery is hard and losing someone is really fucking hard.
Yes. Yes. And I think, you know, that to me, it makes me think about like there's always that thing to me, like picking up a drink would be, you know, the worst thing. So I have done things like when I quit smoking, I was like, okay, this is good because now if I ever feel like I want to drink, like that feeling, mm-hmm. I'll go smoke a cigarette.
Yeah.
Because I put something between me and the drink. So this is what you use to go between you and the drink.
Yeah.
And it didn't lead to a spree of, you know,
it was
acting
just,
out. It was something.
It was a thing I did.
Yeah. It was a thing you did. And it was also, you know, getting some comfort in the moment.
It absolutely provided that. It felt good to have someone hold me.
Right.
And let me cry. And yeah, I was exactly. And it worked. It served a purpose. And
right.
I don't regret, you know, reacting in that way.
No, way better than picking up a drink.
It worked for me. So,
right.
But it's, you know, and then, you know, 6 months later, I lost my other grandmother. And so it was a very similar situation. And I now have tattoos for both of my grandmothers on my left arm. That, you know, that I look at them every day and it reminds me of my family and I have them there with me. And, mm-hmm. you know, these are all tattoos that I've gotten in sobriety. And, you know, that's I feel like that could be a whole other episode of tattoos I got when I was drunk versus.
Oh, my gosh. I think we need to have someone on to talk about tattoos.
Yeah, totally.
Because I don't have any tattoos.
Have you almost gotten a tattoo?
No.
No. Okay.
I'm afraid because I've always been, first of all, I'm afraid of needles, but also I'm afraid of just like the permanence of it.
Yeah.
You know,
that's fair.
That's my biggest fear is like I can't take it back.
I saw this funny meme the other day where it's like I dig dudes with tattoos because it looks like they're into commitment.
I love that. That's
and
great.
It's yeah, totally. Like I've dated so many guys with tattoos because I'm like, oh yeah, like he likes whiskey, he likes rock and roll, he has tattoos, and then it's usually doesn't end up that great.
Doesn't end well.
Not to knock people with tattoos. It's just my personal dating record.
Yeah.
But you know, if someone's new to sobriety and they've just lost someone, maybe it's not even death. Maybe it's like a breakup, or you know.
There are a lot of things we grieve.
Exactly. We grieve a lot of things, or even like a friendship breakup. That is really hard.
Friendship breakups are brutal.
What advice would you have for someone who's new to sobriety and this shit has hit the fan? Like, what do they do?
I mean, to me, like, the first thing to do is connect, right? To find somebody. Like, we have, and there is, you know, available to everybody now online and in other ways, not just in, you know, 12-step, but there are ways to connect and talk. Like, to me, the riskiest thing is to bury it and to not talk to anybody, to, like, just keep it in and let it fester. Because that's kind of, like, it creates, in me, it would create a resentment that could easily lead to a drink. So, I mean, my recommendation, like, I know what I do when something toxic happens to me like that, because I do 12-step, I go to a meeting and I share about it. I call my sponsor and I talk to her about it. Not being in 12-step, I might call you and say, I just got to talk about this. Yeah. And, you know, the people who are, you know, walking the same path of, you know, not drinking, out, whether or not they're in 12-step, I mean, we all understand the value of the connection and of being able to go to people. We almost, you know, it's almost like we're on this team, you know, where we all support each other. It's funny because I've had people say to me how interesting it is that in this community of, you know, largely, you know, a lot of women that, you know, because women can be, and I know in the workplace and whatever, you know, very sort of cutthroat with each other and competitive, how everybody in this community is really supportive of what everybody else is doing. And I think of it because it's like in this setting, we're in recovery first. Recovery is about helping each other, you know, and not doing it alone, whatever that is, and being there when somebody needs help. And I think that that there will be someone. I think it's important to know that if you're someone who is newly sober or struggling to get sober, you know, it doesn't matter what that news is, you don't have to bear it alone, you know. And somebody to, you know, there's always somebody to talk to be online with, even if there's not somebody, you know, physically present in the area. I think that's huge. And then I think, you know, what I learned about it too was that, you know, you have to be gentle with yourself. You have to be so kind to yourself. You know, when I have had things happen, you know, my go-to is like basically sitting down with a pint of Ben and Jerry's and just letting myself like do that. And climb under a blanket and watch some Netflix for a period. I don't go under forever, and I don't, you know.
You come out eventually.
You come out eventually, but, like, I don't get mad at myself. Like, I don't expect perfection out of myself when something really difficult shows up.
That's nice.
You know what I mean? I will say I need a timeout. Like, there are some days that I've said I'm not fit for human consumption. And I just, like, need to be
that's good
on my own, you know. And just to do that, like, I try not to eat full pints of Ben and Jerry's on a consistent basis. But I certainly don't beat myself up about it when I do it, because I need something to comfort me when something really bad has happened.
What is your go-to Ben and Jerry's flavor?
I am a big Cherry Garcia fan.
Of course you are.
Yeah, but I am, because I love cherries and I love the chocolate. So it's not just my Grateful Dead obsession. But I love that. And I love anything that's like double fudge, brownie chunk. Like some people say, you know, like, that's too rich for me, or that whatever, some form of chocolate is too rich. There's nothing too rich or too sweet for me when I'm like doing that. You know, but that could be dangerous for someone who's got a sugar addiction and it's got to really watch it.
You know, eating disorder recovery.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
yeah.
That's,
I mean,
obviously.
But whatever it is, I'm not recommending Ben and Jerry's as, you know, the prescription for everybody by any stretch. But I do think that whatever it is that you go to for comfort, you need to give yourself permission, you know, that's safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, then it does spring into this, this kind of service thing for me. I mean, for me, one of the most important things was, you know, I was incredibly close to my dad, and I was in, I was actually in Santa Fe, and I had a friend of mine, I was with a friend of mine from college, and my dad's doctor, we knew he was doing some testing and stuff. And my dad's doctor called me, on my cell phone, which I knew wasn't good. And he said he hadn't even given the results to my dad yet, which probably whatever. But, you know, I had full proxy with whatever he was going on. And he said to me, listen, the diagnosis is really bad. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it's, you know, metastatic liver disease, which, you know, turned out the primary was pancreatic and it was stage four. And I just remember, like, my knees kind of falling out for me and just sort of being in this stunned state. But, you know, it went to, okay, this is not about me. This is about him. And, it, you know, at the time, he had been healthy all his life. And, you know, it was, he was 85 when this happened. And he took it in sort of like, okay, something was going to happen and this is it. And, but, you know, the first thing I did was figure out, okay, when do I get home? How do I get home? When do I get home? I just, you know, talked to my office and I was like, this, you know, he went on hospice immediately and at home. And I said, this is what's going on with my father and I'm going to do the best I can for now. And I basically threw down the blow up mattress in there in my parents' living room and moved in. And to me, the way to deal with it was I had to keep moving. I had to keep doing the next thing. I had to keep figuring out, you know, talking to the next person about what he needed, spending all that time with him. Like, I had to stay in action because if I had sort of just, you know, sat by myself and not been fully engaged, I think I would have been, it would have been a lot harder for me. Like, at least I felt like, okay, he needs me. My mom needs me. You know, I need to, you know, be strong and do this, not because I felt like, you know, everybody needs a rock and nobody can get through it without me, but because that was my way of saying, okay, you know, this is what will keep me sober. This is what will keep me away from thinking, you know, wow, a drink would be great right now, because I'm too busy and I'm throwing myself into it.
Yeah, well, it's like your family, not just your family needs you, but you guys needed each other.
Yes.
You guys needed each other at your best. Like, they didn't need Lisa, yeah, who was drinking.
Oh, my God. No, Lisa who was drinking wouldn't have made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What really helps me is I like to read essays about something that I'm going through.
Oh, I do stuff like that, too.
Like, you know, we're writers. We write essays. So that's probably why we go to that. But I'm going, whatever I'm going through, I'll Google, you know, essays on blank.
Mm-hmm.
And I love reading about firsthand experiences about people that have been through this, how they dealt with it, and then seeing that they made it through.
Yes.
You know, like, it's not always tied up in a pretty bow. I actually prefer the stories that are not tied up in a pretty bow at the end. It's like, this happened and it sucked and it still sucks, but, you know, life goes on and I made it.
Right.
And that gives me faith and hope that things will be okay. And usually in those essays or even, you know, journalistic pieces about whatever it is, there's resources there too.
Yes.
You know, like you're talking about pancreatic cancer, like most people don't know about pancreatic cancer until it affects them. So it's like you can get some research and data on it that can, you know, probably scare you and calm you down at the same time.
Well, at least because you feel like I have, and I think you do too, like this need for information. Like, I feel like there's power in information. I don't want to not know, you know, I want to understand as best I can what is going on in a particular situation.
Totally.
And yeah. And also I found there was a very, after my dad, you know, it was 5.5 weeks from when he was diagnosed to when he passed away. And after that, and it was very hard. And I've mentioned before that I have a hard time crying. Like, I'm not a crier or whatever, but I, you know, obviously I cried. I started watching this thing. It was a limited series on Showtime that came out right around, this was in 2013. It came out, you know, right after. And it was called Time of Death. And it was a limited series where it was like five episodes of, and you watched people who agreed to be filmed in their final days, like with their families and how they dealt with it. And it was crazy that this thing was on right as I had been, you know, caring for my dad and being with my family as this was happening. And for some reason, I found it so cathartic and I would just be weeping everywhere. And I'm like, oh my God, let's keep watching this because I need to weep. I know I need to weep. and it helped me. And then I started reading like grief memoirs and things like that because I wanted the information. I want to know how do people deal with this? And and you know, is there what happens on the other side?
Well, and I think that's why, you know, you wrote a book on your recovery. I mean, like recovery memoirs are so huge because this is such a huge thing that people are going through and they don't know how it, quote, ends.
Right.
Like they know, like, yeah, I should go to a meeting. Yeah, I should see a therapist. Yeah, I should, you know, I should stop drinking. There's things that they know that stuff. But like what happens 5 years later? What happens 10 years later?
Right. Do I have a life? Am I all by myself because no one wants to hang out with me?
I know. Like, am I ever going to date again?
Right.
Like how?
Yes.
Like, how am I going to live?
And what does sober dating look like?
Yeah. Like all of that stuff. And so like, and that relates to grief as well, where it's just whether you're in recovery or not, grief is fucking hard.
Yes.
And it keeps popping up.
Yes.
Like all throughout life. Like, it's so it's like we all need to develop these healthy-ish coping skills to make it through.
Yeah, and to also be able to, you know, understand it for what it is, you know, and give ourselves, like, there is, you know, in the past, if I had something happen like that, I wouldn't have been able to, I would have just kept drinking and drinking and drinking. I would have been like, oh, okay, let me step back and realize that I'm grieving right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if my dad's death had led to like a massive bender, I might have been like, my dad died and now this happened and then that happened and it would send me down like this instead of being like, okay, this is the time to grieve.
Yes.
And everybody grieves in different ways and for different periods of time. And, you know,
I mean, you are being but, present.
But understanding that you know what it is and you can feel what that is. Whereas I wouldn't have felt anything.
You wouldn't have felt anything before.
Right.
You know, that's so true. I experienced that when both of my grandmother's funerals were open casket. And,
oh, that had to be really hard.
Honestly, it was...
Closure?
Maybe closure is the right way to put it. And beautiful, like a spiritually beautiful moment where I remember like looking at my Nana. Both of my grandmothers were named Jacqueline, by the
right? way. Right? That's right.
And my mother
that.
Is named Jacqueline. So... I was looking at, you know, Nana's body and Gammy's body and, like, finding peace with that. Because, like you're saying, it's a thing that happened.
Right.
They lived this
part
life.
Part of life.
And they're gone now. And there was something peaceful about seeing the body and knowing that that's not what I loved. What
right.
I loved was the spirit.
That lives in your heart.
Yeah. And, like, the fact that, like, it's just like a thing that happened and it's a body in a casket, like to get very, you know, blunt about it.
Yeah.
I began to really, truly like appreciate their personalities and their smiles and like the spirit behind the body.
Yes.
And it was oddly beautiful and it helped me process it where I don't know. If I was still drinking, I probably wouldn't have been able to go up and look at the casket. I think it probably would have been too much for me to deal with emotionally. Like, I wouldn't have known how to deal with that. But I was able to be present with them.
Yes, yes. And that helps you sort of process it in your brain and in your heart and in a way that lets you, I think, kind of like grieve the loss in a healthier way and in a whole different perspective. You know, I think that having been able to, you know, I was the one who had to give my dad his first dose of morphine because nobody, you know what I mean? Like to be, when he wanted it, it wasn't like, you know, he was ready and wanted it. And to have been there, to have felt like I was a comfort to him was, you know, that he could count on me and that I was a comfort. Nobody could have ever counted on me before.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy.
They could count on you for booze and bringing some blow to a party, right?
That's right. But I wouldn't tell them I had the blow because I didn't want to share it with
them. Yeah, that's fair.
But when my father had a few medical issues, nothing obviously nearly as serious. And when he did and I was in recovery, you know, he would always call me the team captain. Like I, you know, interfaced with the hospital. He was, you know, getting a test done at or whatever it was. And nothing makes me more proud in my recovery than the fact that I was able to help my dad, you know, and be in those, in that time and help him. You know, he was such a special man, to like help him as he was, you know, leaving this world.
Yeah. And he's still with you.
Oh, all the time.
I know it sounds corny, but it's, I really.
Oh, no. I feel it all the time. Yeah.
You know, this is all making me think of Tears in Heaven by Eric
Clapton. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And music helps me with dealing with grief a huge amount. Like, we have talked about the fact that I, you know, when I was writing my my book, I would, in order to put myself in scenes that I needed to write, I would listen to the music that I was listening to then, and that would bring me into the moment and into the scene.
I love that.
Yeah, so I made this playlist that was like my writing playlist for, that basically was the accumulation of all the songs that I had, you know, used to put myself in scenes. And, you know, there are just songs that I very closely associate with, you know, there are certain songs that I can remember that were, you know, were around the time that things, that certain things happened. And less so with my dad, but definitely with my friend, there are from when I hear the music, like, that we used to listen to all the time, like, it makes me feel warm. It makes me, you know what I mean? It doesn't make me sad now. It makes me, it brings me back to being, spending time with him. You know, it was a lot of Talking Heads.
Yeah.
It was a lot of Natalie Merchant. You know, it was Red Hot Chili Peppers. It was Eminem. Like, and that, when I hear certain songs, you know, I can picture exactly where we were when we were listening to that. And I feel like I'm in the room with him again.
That's, you know, that's reassuring, because you know how important music is to me and my family, where,
yeah,
you know, my father is a heavy metal musician. Mom was his groupie.
Yes.
That's, you know, that's how they met.
That's how Tawny came into the world.
And that's why I'm here. But, you know, music has.
Thank God.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, guys. And my stepmother is also a leader of heavy metal vocalist.
Yeah.
So music is ever present in the family. And so, like, I, you know, my anxiety sometimes gets me to these places of, like, if I hear this, if my mom dies and I hear this song, how am I going to react?
Right.
And, like, you know, these are problems that I'm nowhere near facing right now.
Right. Right.
But I think about that, where it's, you know, I grew up in a family where it's like a song would be on the radio and I had to know who sang the song. Who was the lead singer?
Who was singing backup?
Yes, like, what's the album called? Yeah. Where are they from? What's the name of this song? Like, I had to know all of this, and so, like, every time I hear any sort of classic rock or heavy metal song, yeah, I am like flipping through my Rolodex of trivia in my head, and I'm thinking, like, oh my God, like, can I listen to this song whenever I lose my father? Can, like,
yes,
you
yes.
know, and like, that is such a, like, a horrible.
No, but I get it. No, I got to tell you, like, I understand what you're thinking about the feet, like, looking ahead and going, you know,
yes,
that's going to happen one day. I mean, I remember, and you know, just since we're doing the dark episode, there have been times that, and I remember before my dad got sick, like when I was, when I had, you know, in sort of the early days with my husband, I remember, like, laying in bed and thinking, you know, it'd be like a Sunday morning and no place that we had to be, and just, like, relaxing and thinking in my head, oh my God, this is gonna, I better appreciate this right now, because this is not gonna be forever. You know, both of his parents were alive at the time. Both of my parents were alive at the time. I mean, now it's my mom is the only one. But, like, thinking, appreciate this now because bad things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds really morbid, but I think having, you know, knowing that this is coming, because even when you know it's going to happen, even when I knew my dad, you know, was in the last days of hospice, when it actually happened, it's still a shock.
Yeah.
It is still a shock. There's no other way to explain it. You still don't, it's still like a punch to the gut.
Well, I still have my grandmother's phone numbers on favorites in my phone, and they've been gone for 3 years. Like, I just, I find it comforting looking at my favorites, knowing, oh, I could call Gammy right now and there's a picture of us together. And
I still have my mom's phone number. I have mom, dad still.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not taking that off. Yeah.
It's those little things that.
It's a connection.
It's yeah.
And
it
you
works.
Will find the music will be a connection. And it will be bittersweet. I mean, it is bittersweet, but it does bring you back into certain moments.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
You know. And now I know the source of your militance on which album this is on and what it was about. We were listening to No Doubt yesterday.
Yes.
And we were listening to Ex-Girlfriend. And I said, oh, this is about Gavin Rossdale. And she was like, no, that was about Tony. Gwen Stefani was still with Tony.
And you were like, this is on Tragic Kingdom, right? I go, no.
No.
This is Return of Saturn.
That's right. I was scolded. And I was scolded again today when we were talking about the Jay-Z Linkin Park.
Yes.
And I said, that song, I said, Dirt Off Your Shoulder. And you said, and what else? And what is that? What is it with?
Yeah.
And
you
was
yeah,
lying
you were
to
like,
you.
You were like, oh, you didn't know that Jay-Z and Linkin Park did an album together? I'm like, yes, I know. And I know that Dirt Off the Shoulder is Jay-Z's song, and it was a mashup with Linkin Park. What is the Linkin Park song? I'm fun, guys. I promise.
She's great to hang out with. She doesn't make you feel stupid or anything.
I'm teaching you.
You are. I learn from you every
day. We both learn from each other.
That's true.
Oh, my gosh. We both learn.
Very true. Very
and,
true.
Like,
I'm glad we're ending this on a happy note.
Maybe let us know what you guys learned from this episode, maybe.
Know you're not alone when the shit hits the fan.
And, you know, unfortunately, shit will continue to hit the fan. And we just need to keep creating spaces where we can talk about it and find healthy ways to deal with those really shitty feelings and keep
and
on
trekking. There for each other. And, you know, to know that on the other side of it, there is like you will feel a connection and a good thing to that person and in that song.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Thanks again to Tempest for making season 3 of Recovery Rocks possible. You can find my work at tawnylara.com, TawnyLara. Find me on social media at Tawny M. Lara. And you can follow my blog at sobrietyparty.com, sobrietea. Lisa, where can we find your work?
You can find my work on my website, lisasmithadvisory.com. You can also find me on social at Girl Walks Out. And you can find my book, Girl Walks Out of a Bar, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any other book-selling websites.
And make sure to click subscribe whenever you're listening to our podcast. You can get new episodes from Lisa and I every week directly to your phone.
Exciting.
In your pocket, like Alanis Morissette.
And then if you like what you hear, please rate us and review us. And thanks so much again for listening.